Hey, you little brand new baby, your papa and your mama think you're mighty nice. Hey, you little brand new baby, and I hope you have a mighty nice life.
Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm attorney Barry Vogel. The development of the large human head and our broad shoulders provide many evolutionary benefits for our species, but they also require assistance for a safe birth and often present life-threatening complications in the birth process. Yet gorillas, our 300-pound primate cousins, give birth without assistance in approximately 15 minutes. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with pediatrician Dr. Mark Sloan, author of Birthday, A Pediatrician Explores the Science, the History, and the Wonder of Childbirth. In our conversation, Dr. Sloan explores how our transition from being four-legged creatures to two-legged ones has forced us to cope with unique physical and cultural differences, and how we cope with these changes and the role medicine plays. We explore some of the benefits of cesarean deliveries, as well as the possible but unverified consequences this birth form presents. I spoke with Dr. Mark Sloan on July 3, 2009, from his home in Santa Rosa, California. We began our conversation when I asked him to explain why the human birth process is far more difficult than that in other primates. The theme song for this edition of Radio Curious is Hey Little Brand New Baby, written by Tom Paxton and sung by Pete Seeger. Dr. Mark Sloan, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thanks. I'm glad to be on the program.
Let's begin by talking about why human birth is so much more difficult than birth in other primates.
Well, in my book, I compared human birth to the birth of a gorilla because it's strikingly different. Gorilla females, first of all, you have a very large mother, about 300 pounds, with a very wide body, and she gives birth to a baby that's only 3 pounds. And in that situation, gorilla females just kind of wander off to the edge of their clearing that they're staying in that night, and 15, 20 minutes later, they come back with a baby. So that actually was one of the reasons I started getting interested in researching childbirth itself, and that kind of led to my writing Birthday. But humans, it's so rough. I mean, if you want to, you know, come down to about three main reasons that it's so much tougher for us. In the course of our evolution, we've had to adapt, first of all, to broad shoulders, because when our ancestors started to walk, the shoulders broadened for a lot of reasons. And so the female pelvis had to widen to allow those broader shoulders to get through. And the second one was when we started getting bigger brains and to accommodate larger heads. The pelvis got bigger in a front-to-back dimension. But there's only so far you can go with that, because eventually, as the brain was getting bigger, if a woman's pelvis enlarged much more, she was going to become very awkward in her walking and running. And in prehistoric times, that would have made her an easy target for predators. So the third thing that we did is, as our brains get more and more developed, we began having our babies in earlier and earlier stages of development, so that a lot of the development that would have gone on within the womb now goes on outside the womb, which is why our babies are so defenseless and so helpless at first, because a lot of the development that would go on in a gorilla or another primate in the womb, we basically kind of give birth to these neurologically half-baked kids of ours, and it takes them about a year to catch up with the skill set that a newborn gorilla or chimp would have.
And that superimposes various cultural behaviors on our species.
Well, it certainly has changed dramatically how we give birth. We're the only primate species that has birth attendants. And that came about in the course of the changes of the shape of the human pelvis. Our babies actually come out flipped over compared to other primates. When you look at a gorilla birth, not that gorillas give birth on their back, but if you imagine a female lying on her back, the baby comes out face up looking at the sky. And that's a very easy situation for a long-armed gorilla to reach down and clear mucus and get the cord off the baby's neck if possible. Well, our babies come out facing the floor, you know, the other way. And because we're relatively short-armed, it's almost impossible for a woman to really be able to reach her baby as it's being born. And as a result, that's over time how we evolved the idea that we have to have people, and we really want people with us at the time of birth, because you can give birth by yourself, but it's a lot more dangerous, and it's always good to have help. But that's for midwives and obstetricians and doulas and everything, where all that developed because of the compromises we made during evolution and how we give birth.
Then the evolutionary compromise has resulted in significant pain, although we haven't really perhaps been able to analyze the extent of the pain to gorillas or other primates during their birth process. But let's talk about women.
I've attended about 3,000 births in my career as a pediatrician. And just to be clear, I don't do the deliveries. I get called in if there's a concern that the baby might be sick. But it's a pretty intense experience, and there are lots of ways you can prepare yourself for that pain so that it becomes much more manageable. For a woman having her first baby, it may be more than she was anticipating. Or if the baby comes down the birth canal in an odd angle, it can be more painful than it should be. There have been a variety of folk remedies used to help women with their pain, anything from poultices to herbs to, in ancient Greek times, there was this trend towards using hyena paws, hyena liver. I don't know what it was about hyenas and childbirth. Really, things started to change in the 1850s when chloroform and ether were introduced for surgery in England and then became adapted for obstetric use. And from then on, it's been one big controversy after another about managing pain in childbirth.
Can you talk about the physiological aspects of the birth process that produces the pain?
Labor pain is really two distinct kinds of pain, and it's not that simple, but there's two different sets of nerves involved. The first is early in the pregnancy, as the uterus starts to contract. Women have what amount to really bad cramps. Again, being a man, I've never had a menstrual cramp, but there's supposedly like really severe menstrual cramps. And it's the same sort of nerves that get irritated as if you had severe diarrhea, that same sort of deep, hard-to-locate cramping pain. The second phase is as the baby starts to come down the birth canal and actually stretches skin and ligaments, and that's the kind of pain that all of us can relate, maybe not in that degree, but in terms of any time you've had a skin injury or you've twisted your ankle, it's that type of easily located where you can put a finger on it. So early on, it's more the diffuse kind of hard-to-locate crampy pain, and then it starts to get pretty intense and very easy to localize.
Currently, there are a lot of analgesics that would reduce the pain. How do they fit in with the Lamaze method or the trained breathing method where the father or some other attendant is there to direct breathing and pushing?
Most of those types of techniques are based on controlling the breathing, almost a self-hypnosis sort of situation where you're concentrating, focusing on the contraction itself and breathing your way through it or visualizing your way through it. That would lead to probably the healthiest outcome for babies is if you can get through without any kind of medications at all. But for a lot of women, that it just isn't going to be in the cards. There are women who's anything from just having a lower ability to tolerate pain in general to women who've had past histories of trauma themselves, whether it's sexual trauma or just injuries to the pelvis, that it's going to be very difficult for them to get through a situation like that.
So the best situation for the baby is not to have any pain reduction medicine in the baby's system that would pass through the placenta.
Well, that's ideal, but you also have to realize that unmanaged pain, a woman who's really having a difficult time with her pain, that's not healthy for a baby either, because oftentimes the way we evolve is if you are under a lot of stress, that actually will slow down and even stop labor sometimes, because it was as if you were under attack from a saber-toothed tiger or something. Nature said, look, this is not a good time to have this baby. Let's get you out of here. And so a woman who has pain that she's not able to cope with, who can't stay comfortable enough to get through the process, sometimes that'll actually work against you in terms of having a healthy birth. So I look at it as trying to use as little as possible, but not feeling terribly guilty if you do use something to get through the birth process. And that's where how, especially in hospitals, how we manage pain is pretty limited compared even to Canada and Europe. We tend to be very, very epidural based, and women who want to have a natural birth as natural as possible in the hospital often don't have a whole lot else that is offered to them. beyond narcotic shots or local anesthetic injections to get them through it.
So over the evolutionary continuum that perhaps ended about 200 years ago, I think you said, when chemical pain reduction methods were introduced, the healthiest and the most able to give birth of women and the most able to survive babies survived. But now, through the methods that we have of cesarean sections and treatment of newborn infants, many more will survive. Do you have any thoughts on how that may adjust the evolutionary aspect in this epoch of our longer evolution?
Well, it's hard to look down the road. I mean, I'm assuming we just survive as a planet long enough to see any evolutionary changes. But I think all of this, you know, the C-sections, things like that, they're all of medicine basically is counter to what nature intended, meaning nature intended to thin out the herd, you know, that the strongest would survive, that would keep the gene pool good and healthy. Well, we made our decision a long time ago that we weren't going to just let people die or let them suffer unnecessarily, and that's where, you know, medicine and other healing professions got involved. But over the time, yeah, if the ability is always there, if the technology is always there, if the wealth is there to create the operating rooms and the equipment necessary to do C-sections, many women who would have died in childbirth or who would never have been able to give birth in the past can still do that. So certainly the ability to have a natural vaginal birth would not be as important. Now, I don't think it's a good thing, but if we were looking at evolutionary trends, I would expect over time, if there are artificial ways to have babies, that would mean that a lot of women who were not capable of having babies 300, 5,000 years ago can. It's hard to predict what that means for the future.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Dr. Mark Sloan from his home in Santa Rosa, California. He's the author of Birth Day, A Pediatrician Explores the Science, the History, and the Wonder of Childbirth. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Mark, let's talk about cesarean delivery, its background and history, and what it is able to do for us now that it couldn't do before.
Cesarean sections have been attempted all the way back into ancient Roman times, and even in beyond that, there are writings about women being various euphemisms for a baby born through the abdomen. But in those days, up until the mid-19th century, late 19th century, that was an act of desperation. That was when a woman had already been given up for dead, and the whole point of the C-section was to try to remove the baby before the baby died, and it almost never worked. It was, if you go back to Roman times, it was actually considered a crime to bury a woman who died in childbirth if you didn't attempt a cesarean, because the thought was you may have, you know, allowed the baby to die unnecessarily as well. So it was really an act of desperation all the way through until, again, coming back to chloroform and ether, when those pain medications came out, because, again, the previous ones were done with no anesthesia at all. You can imagine how horrible that must have been. But when doctors were finally able to get some time, to buy some time by using pain medications, then they could take more time to try to make sure that the incision was clean, and then they got rid of all the bleeding blood vessels and things like that before they finished the surgery.
Currently, the rate of C-sections increased from about 1% in 1920 to 6% of births in 1971 to 31, almost a third of all births in the current time. Why? What's the background on this?
Well, even with all the advances that helped the cesarean section become a safer surgery, the pain medications, antibiotics in the 1930s, you're right, I picked 1971 because that's the year I graduated from high school, but it was 6% of babies were born by cesareans then, and now it's probably, we don't have statistics for 2008, but it's probably about 33% now. And the main thing that got that started was when electronic fetal monitoring was brought in the 1980s primarily, and that was that belly band that women get put on them in the hospital where you can constantly see the baby's heart rate. And in the days before the electronic fetal monitoring, a nurse literally came around every 10 or 15 minutes to the labor room and listened with her stethoscope. And if she counted out a healthy heart rate for the fetus, that was it. She'd come back 10, 15 minutes later. and no one knew what what was going on in between times. Well, with the electronic fetal monitoring, suddenly you could see everything. And I remember when these came in, it was amazing. You'd see the heart rate goes up, the heart rate goes down, and people at first didn't know how to interpret that. And so a lot more C-sections. The big boom in C-sections came in the 80s and 90s because of that. And then the feeling amongst obstetricians was and still is that the safest thing to do once you've had one C-section is to have another C-section. And so really, like the last 10 years particularly, things have taken off because there was a move towards a vaginal birth after cesarean, a woman who's had a C-section, then going on to have a vaginal birth, which was a great idea for reducing C-section rates, but then because of some controversial studies that said that might not be a safe way to go, the most hospitals then abandoned it or really reduced the ability of a woman to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, and that really led to the big explosion in the last 10 years. So it's ironic that in other parts of the world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, more C-sections would be a good thing because there they don't have the operating rooms, the obstetricians, anybody who can really do a cesarean section. So a lot of women are still dying in childbirth. But the World Health Organization thinks about 10 to 15% cesarean rate is probably healthy. And we're triple that, right?
Well, again, evolutionarily, babies were born vaginally, and they were the ones that survived. You indicate in Birthday that there's a difference in the newborn infant that is born vaginally versus born with a cesarean delivery.
Mm-hmm. And that's a concern for me as a pediatrician, because that's information that's just starting to come out now. Some studies just in the last few years, people noted that babies born by cesarean birth for whatever reason, and whether it was a scheduled cesarean or whether you were in an emergency one after you've been in labor already, those babies tended to have, down the road, a higher risk of asthma and some other allergic-type diseases years down the road. It isn't clear yet what the relationship would be, and I want to make sure that people understand it's not, gee, if you have a C-section, you're going to have asthma. It's an increased risk, although it's not that significant. But during labor, a lot of things happen, and Isaac Newton, who said that nature does nothing without reason, and the labor itself, during that course of the labor, the mother floods her fetus with antioxidants, and one in particular called glutathione, which might have something to do with modulating and finishing off the fine-tuning of a baby's immune system. Another possibility, which is actually turning out probably to be more possible, is that when a baby's born, babies that are born going through the birth canal have very different bacteria in their bowel years down the road than babies who are born by C-section who never went through the birth canal. And it is those bacteria that we get into our mouth and swallow it down into our intestines during birth that help our immune systems figure out what's good germs, what's bad germs. And it may be that some of these immune system problems we're seeing are the result of having the wrong bacteria in our bowels at birth, from depending on how you were born, which is leading to some interesting interventions. Some people are proposing babies that are born by C-section get a dose of the types of germs that you would get coming down the birth canal, and to see if that might have some effect on it. But it's just, there are so many immune system problems out there, diabetes, arthritis, things like that, that no one's really even looked at yet. And on the same token, we have a lot of women who, now the trend is coming, what I called in the book, so the Britney Spears effect, women with their first pregnancy with no reason to have a C-section are signing up to get C-sections, and it's because they don't want to go through labor. And that's not a huge trend in the U.S., but it's very, very common in Latin America. So I do worry, from a pediatrician standpoint, that a lot of what we're looking at with this big rise in asthma, paralleling this big rise in cesarean sections, if those two things might not be related to some extent.
The immune system issue is kind of interesting. Would you contemplate that the immunities are best if they come from the mother, or is it something generic that could be added to the baby's system at the time of birth?
Well, the bulk of the protection a child gets and the bulk of its development of its immune system takes place in the womb. Mother sends antibodies across the placenta. For instance, if a mother has had chickenpox herself, not during pregnancy, but even years before, she will send antibodies to chickenpox to her baby, which will last about 4 months or so. So it'll prevent that child from getting chickenpox, even with exposure, for several months of the most vulnerable part of its life. And that goes on all the time. Whatever a mother is immune to, whatever illnesses she's immune to, she sends the ability to her fetus to protect itself from that. And then there's obviously quite a bit of immune system boost going on when you breastfeed after the fact. But there is a lot of immune system activity going on during the course of labor that it would be pretty hard to believe it doesn't play some role in fine-tuning that whole process.
There's another issue that perhaps stems from the cesarean delivery, and that's the problem of the disappearing obstetrician.
Part of the problem, too, with the number of C-sections is that obviously there's a lot of defensive medicine going on, because it's one of the reasons I'm glad I'm not an obstetrician, because you're really in a rough spot a lot of times during a labor that looks troublesome but may not be. You know, obviously the main concern is a healthy mother and a healthy baby, but in the back of an obstetrician's mind, I'm sure it's, gee, I'm going to get sued if this doesn't come out right. And it's true. You know, an obstetrician, they average about three to four, I think it is, major lawsuits during their career, and that's an average. You know, and most of those are not. They really are settled for the obstetrician. There wasn't really, things can happen to babies and mothers that have nothing to do with you know, what was going on in terms of the care they received. That fear is there. So it's there to the point that in some states, in the book I talked about Pennsylvania, where about one out of six obstetricians have stopped doing OB care because of that very problem. As their malpractice rates went up, they just decided they weren't going to do it anymore. And they specialized, they stayed with gynecologic procedures and taking care of gynecologic cancers and things like that. Well, that snowballs the whole process, because if it gets to the point where we have fewer obstetricians willing to do, you know, OB care, then women, especially in rural areas, have to travel further to get to whoever is going to deliver their baby, which makes for riskier situations because it's a longer transport to get to the hospital. And ironically, that ends up with more C-sections, because by the time some women get there, they're having difficulties already. So and in the Pennsylvania studies, too, most of the obstetricians who had stopped had never been sued. They were younger obstetricians who felt they couldn't afford the malpractice premiums associated with OB care. It's a really complicated picture, and I don't mean to make it sound like, oh, gee, it's because they're getting sued. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but the bottom line is a lot of obstetric residency programs are not filling up.
You point out 9% of newborns are not the child of the father and the family. And you link that to newborns looking very racially similar.
Well, the 9% is a big average, because it depends on the culture you're looking at. In some cultures, it was one of the Indian tribes I looked at in South America. It was about 30% of the kids were not the child of the father of the family, although it was not as big a deal in that culture as it was in some other cultures. But overall, when anthropologists have looked at it, about 9% of kids are what are called children of misassigned paternity. And I always like anthropologists and their euphemisms. The first thing that always happens when you walk into a room as a pediatrician to meet the family for the first time with a brand new baby is someone undoubtedly says, doesn't he look just like his father? And then a smart pediatrician's answer is, yep, he does. But basically, babies are if you look at them all as a group, they're fairly generic. They look like a lot of people. And that's probably, evolutionarily, that was a good thing, because if babies really did look like their fathers, and you could identify that this is my son, right, or my daughter right away, then in olden times, then it would have been obvious that, well, this baby belongs to the guy in the next cave, and that would have made for all kinds of problems. And it would have made it less likely that child would have survived, plus perhaps other children this fellow might have with the same female, same woman. And so it made for better survival for babies if you really couldn't tell right off the bat. It sounds like, well, what good would that do the father of this family to be taking care of the biological child of somebody else along with his own children? Well, they said if he were suddenly to reject this child, that might put his other children at risk. But also, if you look at all men in general, oftentimes they might have a baby in somebody else's family that is managing to hide out by being somewhat anonymous looking. So in terms of men passing on their genes to the next generation as a group, it made sense for anonymous babies so that that most of those babies would be taken care of and survive.
Let's change topics here for a minute and talk about managed health care. You work for one of the larger managed health care programs and have for a long time here in California. What are your thoughts on the upcoming plan of President Obama to address managed health care? What do you think it should look like?
Well, I think that you have to have some sort of public part of it. Again, I have not had my brother's a physician in Albuquerque, and I'll say right, I am not an expert in this area at all, but listening to him talk about his dealings with insurance companies, and how it is so difficult for him to get approval. Or he does a lot of interventions, a lot of injections, a lot of hands-on things. And it's frustrated him to the point that if he could retire right now, he would. And I think if there's at least some basic coverage, for everybody, that would at least that's going to give us a much better chance of having a healthy population than the way we're going. Any system where we get 40 million people who don't have insurance is not working, no matter what the many commercials that will soon come out are going to say.
Well, Dr. Mark Sloan, author of Birthday, A Pediatrician Explores the Science, the History, and the Wonder of Childbirth, we thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, we have a couple of questions. One is, can you tell us of an important concept or an idea that you learned recently?
From research in this book, I've gotten myself involved with a group of midwives who are trying to bring nitrous oxide back as a labor pain reliever. It's when I was talking about how it's different in the U.S. versus Canada and Europe, that's the main difference. We tend to do epidurals or narcotic shots, and I figured that, that's how I grew up in medicine. I figured that's the way you go. But the idea of trying to help a woman get through, the transition for me in my career has been to go from seeing birth as almost a pathological process where things go wrong, to seeing it as a natural part of life where sometimes you just need to give people a little bit more help to get through, and they'll do great. And so I'm part of that now. The group is trying to get nitrous oxide brought back as what the British call a good enough pain reliever for labor. And for me, that was the biggest eye-opener of the book, was how I was brought up as a doctor being probably the right way to do things, and then changing over time to seeing that, that may not be the best way to go.
And finally, can you tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yeah, it's completely off topic. I just finished reading The Discovery of France, The Historical Geography by Graham Robb. And it was really fascinating. I've never traveled to France, but this is the history of why France is the way it is, and how just 150 years ago, how it was just dozens and dozens of little cultures all jammed together, and then talking about the natural landscape and how all of that has changed over the last 150 years. It was really, it's a fascinating book, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Well, Dr. Mark Sloan, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Barry.
Hey, you little brand new baby, your papa and your mama think you're mighty nice. Hey, you little brand new baby, and I hope you have a mighty nice life.
Dr. Mark Sloan is a pediatrician and author of Birthday, A Pediatrician Explores the Science, the History, and the Wonder of Childbirth. We spoke with him from his home in Santa Rosa, California, on July 3rd, 2009. The book he recommends is The Discovery of France by Graham Robb. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website for further details. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. And the phone is 707-462-6541. The theme song for this edition of Radio Curious is Hey Little Brand New Baby, written by Tom Paxton and sung by Pete Seeger. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.
You know it's worth it just to see her smile, and I hope you have a mighty nice life.